Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24-7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Democratic National Committee suing Russia, the Trump campaign, and WikiLeaks, and discuss how this might impact the Mueller investigation and bring the issue of impeachment to the forefront in this year's midterm election campaign as the central plank of the Democrats' platform. Matt Engel, who directs the Texas Democratic Trust and Lone Star Project and served as the executive director of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, joins us to assess whether the fundraising benefits of the DNC's lawsuit will be outweighed by the negative messaging Democratic candidates in swing states will be stuck with as large numbers of hopefuls join in the primary races. We will explore the depth of the anticipated blue wave, particularly in Texas, where Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke is challenging Ted Cruz in a U.S. Senate race which could prove a tectonic upset for the Trump-dominated GOP, particularly since Cruz has written in Time magazine such fawning praise of his previously bitter rival, Trump, which has been mocked widely for its unctuous sycophancy. Then we will speak with Lawrence Jacobs, the chair of political studies at the University of Minnesota, where he directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey School of Political Affairs. He joins us to discuss how Donald Trump is capitalizing on the imperial presidency erected by presidents since World War II, provoking dire fears that American democracy will die since our national security and foreign policy is in the hands of a unilateralist with an aberrant personality and a reckless governing style. We'll assess whether a deal coming out of the Trump-Kim Jong-un summit, no matter how cosmetic, could revive Trump's presidency, or a war with Iran could give him a short-term boost before things turn sour, as they did with the Iraq War. Then finally, with students across the country demonstrating on Friday on the anniversary of the Columbine School massacre, we'll speak with Josh Koskoff, a Connecticut-based trial attorney who represented 10 Sandy Hook families in a groundbreaking case against the Remington Arms Company for marketing the Bushmaster AR-15 used in shooting 20 6- and 7-year-old schoolchildren and 6 educators in just 5 minutes. We will also discuss the lawsuit by a number of Sandy Hook families against Alex Jones of InfoWars for promoting his despicable conspiracy theories that has led to the further victimization of these families who already suffered such unspeakable losses. And joining us now is Matt Engel, who directs the Texas Democratic Trust and the Lone Star Project, a political action committee that aims to be an aggressive fact-checker on the Republican Party, both at the state and national levels. Matt Engel has served as executive director of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and from 2000 to 2004, he was the executive director of the House Democratic Caucus. Welcome to Background Briefing, Matt Engel.
Hello, how are you? It's glad to be with you.
Well, thanks, Matt. And I've got a lot I wanted to run by you. The lawsuit from the DNC suing the Trump campaign, Russia, and WikiLeaks. Also, the triage going on with so many Democratic candidates running for these seats in the swing states. And, of course, the Beto O'Rourke-Ted Cruz race in Texas, which could be a tectonic upset, particularly following Ted Cruz's Valentine to his former rival, Donald Trump. But let's begin with the DNC lawsuit against the Russians, against the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks. Obviously, it's going to do well in terms of fundraising. And I noticed that the head of the Trump campaign for 2020, Parcells, said rather snarkily that the DNC is broke. So what's going on there? Because a lot of people are concerned that the lawsuit's going to muddy the waters with the Mueller investigation.
Well, Ian, I fall into the camp of agreeing that it probably does muddy the water some and distracts Democrats and voters from the task at hand, which is to win elections in the 2018 election. And so I wish the DNC would have put it off. I understand their frustration that the DNC was violated, and there certainly appears to have been collusion between Russia, the RNC, certainly the Trump campaign, and WikiLeaks. But I think that the types of change that we so desperately need in the country are only going to come along by winning elections, not winning lawsuits. And so I wish the DNC would have waited and would instead direct its energy specifically towards beating vulnerable Republicans in 2018.
Well, I think in some ways you could make the case that rather than wait, they should have done it much earlier, right out of the gate. The good thing about a lawsuit like this, which is a civil suit, assuming somehow you get the right judge, or I don't know whether you could even get a jury on a case like this, but the long and the short of it would, from my mind, I think it's pretty clear that President Obama didn't step up at the time and alert the public. Now, he did try. He met with McConnell and Ryan and Pelosi and Harry Reid when the Russian stuff first emerged through our intelligence services. And McConnell and Ryan would not cooperate and make a joint statement that Russia was interfering. And Obama decided not to go ahead because he thought it might appear partisan and therefore muddy the waters in the election. But wouldn't it have been really useful to have come out of the gate and had forced some kind of investigation early rather than later?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I think in hindsight, there's no question that it should have been acted upon immediately. And I think that President Obama does take some responsibility for that. And I think it goes to kind of what is good about President Obama, but also what sometimes was a challenge. And that is it's the notion of when they go low, we go high. Well, sometimes when they go low, you got to get down and slug it out with them. And I think this is a time in which rather than worrying about looking good or being partisan, they should have done the right thing. But I also, though, will say that that is hindsight. At the time, most of us thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and that you wanted to be in a situation where you could bring the country together after that election. So I'll give them a little bit of a pass for not acting at that time. I think now, though, that it is a distraction. And I understand the frustration of the DNC. I understand the need to do things to bring some attention so that they can raise money. But I think that we ought to be hyper-focused on making the best decisions to spend our money to win elections in 2018. If ever we've known in our history that elections matter, and at the end of the day, the story is told by the winners, it's now. And so we need to be winners in November of 2018.
And again, I'm speaking with Matt Angell, who directs the Texas Democratic Trust and the Lone Star Project, a political action committee that aims to be an aggressive fact checker on the Republican Party, both at the state and national levels. Matt Angell has served as executive director of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and from 2000 to 2004, he was the executive director of the House Democratic Caucus. Now, when you say that maybe Obama should have got down and wrestled in the mud a little, that's exactly what critics of Comey are saying now, that talk about muddying the waters. They say that he should be not wrestling in the mud with Donald Trump. And that reminds me what a Marine drill instructor once said to me, even if you wrestle a turd to the ground, you end up smelling like you know what. So what do you think of the criticism that's being leveled at Comey in regard to what you just recommended Obama should have done?
Well, I think that there are very different circumstances. I think that with President Obama, it was about protecting our country and putting us in the best position to make sure we have fair elections. And I know that he believed that Hillary Clinton would win and there would be a chance to do that. I think with James Comey, whether you agree with what he's done or not, history is not likely to be kind to him. I certainly think that he's telling the truth now. I think that his memos are revealing and further expose Donald Trump as just a horrible human being, but we knew that. I think that Mr. Comey has made some bad judgments all during the run-up to the 2018 election and probably since then as well. And so while I don't question his patriotism, I don't question that he is an honorable and honest man, I do question his judgment.
So since you were the executive director of the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and we mentioned in the opening about the New York Times article on Sunday about the difficulty underway with, I guess the word would be triage, where you've got so many candidates, hopefuls, running in these Democratic primaries against vulnerable Republican incumbents that
by definition, it dilutes the situation. Now, on the other hand, a lot of the candidates, and God bless them, they're saying, wait a minute, this is our system, and everybody has a right to run, and let the voters decide. So where do you come down on that?
Well, I'm of the view that the DCCC has a hard and important job. They do have to make tough decisions. And they have a responsibility to spend their donors' money wisely. And that means that there will be some candidates that they like, that they personally like, that they believe that would be excellent members of Congress, but may not have as much chance to win as somebody else. I can remember when I was executive director of the DCCC, having to call candidates that I liked a lot personally and thought they would be excellent members of Congress and tell them that, look, we just don't see it. We don't see the data there. We don't see you getting across the line, and so we're not going to be there. And then calling some others that maybe at a personal level I didn't like them as much, but I knew that they could win. We thought they had a chance to win, and we would call them and say, we're in and we're there with you. And so it's a cold-blooded business, and it needs to be. They won't always be right. They'll make some mistakes because it's not a pure science. But they have to make tough choices based on their money. The worst thing they could do is take the money for 40 races and try to spread it over 60. If they've got money for 40, they should fund 40. If they got money for 60, they should fund 60. But trying to spread your money too thin is a mistake, and it's not they're not doing a good service to their donors and not covering that money correctly. Again, they won't always be right. Nobody's 100% correct, but they have to make the best choices that they can, and sometimes those are really, really tough.
But when you talk about money, and obviously Jess Unruh out here in California famously said, money is the mother's milk of politics, that brings up the kind of schism in the Democratic Party going from the last election, does it not? The donor class versus the grassroots sort of Bernie Sanders supporters. And how do you navigate that? Because Bernie Sanders showed that you could match, pretty substantially the kind of money that comes from the donor class, getting it in small donations from regular folks.
Well, again, I'm not the best person to talk about Bernie Sanders. My view is Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat, and at the point in which Bernie Sanders is willing to stand up and say out loud that he is a Democrat, then I think Democrats should listen to him a little bit closer than they should feel obligated to listen to him now. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of money, though, it's really not a matter of whether you're getting the money with small donors or with large donors, that you have to have enough money to tell your story. You can certainly have a fully funded campaign and spend the money badly and lose. But if you aren't funded adequately, it doesn't matter how good your candidate is. It doesn't matter how good your message is. You won't be heard. Instead of thinking about it as money, we should think about it as a megaphone, and that megaphone has to be big enough and loud enough for voters to hear you. If they're not, then you won't win. And so I think the DCCC, whether they're working to raise their money through small donors or through larger donors, the key is to spend it wisely. And the truth of the matter is that every good campaign that I've been part of has fundraising that operates at three levels. They have a vigorous grassroots small donor program. They have another program in which people can write medium-sized checks. And then they have some other people who have the financial wherewithal to write larger checks. And those are usually the healthiest campaigns, quite frankly.
But if you were in a situation with the DCCC and you had to make a choice, my understanding is, it seems logical to me, that the way to pick up House seats from the Republicans is you got to run moderate candidates, for the want of a better description, in these red states to turn them blue. And we saw that in Pennsylvania. So how do you navigate that in the sense that if you put up a real flaming liberal, for the want of a better description, in one of those swing states that a Republican incumbent has held, you're not likely to get elected. But if you have somebody that's more centrist Democrat, you're much more likely. That seems logical to me. So I don't understand why the party can't figure this out and have more moderate or centrist Democrats run in red states that they could flip, and then liberals in more safer districts, although maybe they've already got incumbents in those districts. So what's the... The two questions are, that's one question, but the second question would be, once you elect a sort of centrist, if not Republican light, as the critics would say, what do you get if the guy or woman votes with the Republicans?
Well, that is two questions, and I'll answer the first one first, and that is, it's easier said than done to say, well, I want to recruit a certain type of candidate, because people often recruit themselves. And so you have a number of districts in which people who are to the left of the district, people who are running really from the left back to the center rather than from the center out, have jumped into some of these primaries. And in some cases, that discourages a more moderate from getting in because they don't want to be in a primary in which it'll be so vicious and divisive that they'll be badly wounded coming out of primary, or they don't want to spend the money at the primary level knowing that they'll need it in the general election level. So in some cases, you've had some more moderate candidates stand down because the more liberal candidate jumped in to begin with. And then going along with that, though, if you're the DCCC, a lot of the noise about whether a candidate is centrist or moderate or whether they're liberal, they're going to look at this with a very cold eye based on polling, based on survey, based on an individual district. And if there are districts in which you can't get to a win number with a liberal candidate, you're going to find them pulling out of those districts. There are some districts in which maybe they've been behaving in a moderate way, but there's a big enough Democratic base that you can stimulate a base and get turnout high enough to win. There are many others that when you maximize the number of base voters, you're still short, and you have to build a coalition of independent voters and even some fair-minded Republicans in order to win. In those districts, you almost always need a more centrist candidate. And I think the DCCC has to look at those one by one by one. And in terms of the ability to fund in those races, it really is a matter of whether or not there is enough money in the state and within the district to go with and to complement the money that's being spent nationally.
Well, but do you think, though, that there are some surprises out there in terms of the traditional calculuses? For example, these teacher strikes in red states indicate to me that maybe the lessons have been overlearned from the last election, that Trump stealing the white working class. It would seem to me that the white working class is desperate for the right message, and these teachers in these red states are showing that they can mobilize and be politically effective.
I absolutely believe that's correct, and I think it's two things. It's not only are they showing the ability to organize and mobilize, but they're hitting on an issue that's important to every family. Every family out there thinks about, at some level, education and quality public education and value that. And I come from a red state in Texas, and even in Texas, there is a real concern that the state has failed to fund education at a basic level in order to provide kids the opportunity to realize their own potential. And that starts with making sure you've got good teachers that are treated fairly. And so I think education has become a national issue now, even though it's a state function. And I believe that particularly in red states where there's been underfunded education and where money that should have been invested into the schools instead has been either given away as tax breaks to corporations or just squandered on other things, I think that that is a real opportunity for Democrats to break through. I think there will be some surprise elections. I think there are some Republicans are sitting right now thinking they're okay who are going to lose. Now, I also think, though, that Democrats have to get our head out of just the notion of talking about or thinking that a blue wave just happens, that just disappointment or disgust or dislike for President Trump automatically means that Democrats win across the board. I think that we have to look at every race individually, look at the issues in that state and in that district, and make sure that those are working for us, and then the national environment will start to push you across the line. But many of these districts are hard, and you can't get there with just a national environment. You got to have good candidates and good campaigns.
Well, just in the last minute or so, touching on the Beto O'Rourke, Congressman Beto O'Rourke is doing very well crossing the state of Texas. He's challenging Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz made a very sycophantic Valentine to his former bitter rival, Donald Trump, at Time magazine, which has led to a lot of derision. But on the issue that you brought up, which is in these swing states, if you run on the basis of impeachment, you're going to lose. Cruz himself is seizing on that. And I'll read the latest tweet from Ted Cruz. The contrast couldn't be greater. Beto supports open borders, aggressive gun control, and impeaching the president. In contrast, like most Texans, I'm glad for policy victories under Trump, low taxes, less regulations, more jobs. And what's fun to watch is the mainstream media losing their minds. So, that, of course, fun to watch was one of the Valentines that he gave to Trump in Time magazine. So let's touch on that. You think it's a total trap for the Democrats to run on the basis of impeachment because the Republicans are already seizing on that, saying that's all the Democrats want to do. They just want to impeach this guy. It's not a positive message, you know, and the nation's going to go through years of agony for what?
I agree. Running on impeachment is a mistake. I think the prospect for impeachment is out there. People who are paying attention know that the president not only may have, but probably did commit some impeachable offense, and that the time in the elections will take care of that. Talking about it, running on it is a mistake. I think talking too much about Trump is a mistake, because I think the atmosphere itself and the actions of the Trump administration will keep him in the news in a negative way. People have, I think, started to make their judgment about Trump and that their dissatisfaction with him as president and in Trumpism generally. And so I think that Democrats will do better by running in their districts, in their states, talking about the things that are important there and themselves. And I think Ted Cruz, though, also has made a big mistake by really being just sycophantic with Donald Trump. And I think that hits Texans particularly negatively, because Texans remember that Donald Trump called Ted Cruz's wife ugly. He accused his father of being part of an assassination attempt. He called Cruz himself a liar, coined the term lying Ted. And when Texans see Ted Cruz then just so in such an unappealing way grovel to Trump, it really makes them see him as weak and somebody who is trying to manipulate them and who can't stand up for himself. And so the worst thing you can be as a Texas politician is weak. And I think that Ted Cruz is demonstrating weakness. And that's and so his negative countenance with that weak action really plays to Beto's advantage, because Beto comes across as somebody who knows his own mind, who's willing to speak the truth and say it loudly, willing to go to every corner of Texas, even the most Republican cities, and tell his story in a very positive way. And so I think the positive impact and the positive approach of Beto O'Rourke versus the dark and kind of snivelly countenance of Ted Cruz is playing very well right now. Again, Texas is a very, very tough state for any Democrat. And Ted Cruz, just because he's a Republican, has an advantage. But Beto O'Rourke has made this a race, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Well, just in closing, though, Rudy Giuliani, I think, has been brought on the Trump team because he knows Mueller. And they're already saying, we're going to wrap it up in a couple of weeks. You know, I'm going to talk to Mueller. We're old colleagues. This thing is coming to an end. I think that's a tactic. I think they basically, in a couple of weeks' time, they're going to turn around and say, Giuliani is going to turn around and say, you know, we tried. These guys are total Democratic partisans. This is a witch hunt. And that'll give Trump the excuse to shut the Mueller investigation down or to fire the Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, or whatever the combination of scenarios are. So then how do you avoid impeachment when flagrant obstruction of justice hits the headlines?
Well, I'm not saying that that the president shouldn't be impeached for impeachable offenses. I'm just saying that that's not a good campaign message right now. my sense is with Giuliani that they're not that well organized. They're not that strategic. I think they're pretty much making it up as they go along. I think the most likely announcement in 2 weeks is that Giuliani's no longer doing that job.
Another Scaramucci. Well, I thank you for joining us, Matt Engel.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Matt Engel, who directs the Texas Democratic Trust and the Lone Star Project, a political action committee that aims to be an aggressive fact-checker on the Republican Party, both at the state and national levels. Matt Engel has served as executive director of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and from 2000 to 2004, he was the executive director of the House Democratic Caucus. We can take a brief station break and be back looking into whether American democracy will die with Trump capitalizing on the imperial presidency.